So what do you do while you're in Scotland? Play golf, of course. I'm Paul Wilkinson, and in this podcast, I am packing my bag and wondering just how much kit to take on the shoot tomorrow. Well, it's late on Wednesday evening. It's been a really lovely couple of days, and I must apologise. Yes, I know it's Wednesday. It's not Sunday when I usually publish a podcast, but I prioritised getting ready to get into a car and drive up to see some really lovely friends of ours in Scotland. And while the podcast is really important, it was much more important that we got in into the car and onto the motorway before, well, it was about 6:30, I think, when we left. And it's a 5.5, 6-hour drive up to where they live in Dumfries. And so in the end, although I dragged the kit up with me in case I get a chance to record it, either in the car or when we arrived, of course I didn't. All that happened was I arrived and thought, you know what, this is really lovely. I drank beer, I drank whiskey, and we had a rather marvellous couple of days, culminating in yesterday with me having my first and to date only game of golf. Up until now, golf has always struck me as a rather stupid game. You have a very big field with small holes, small balls, and a stick. And that just never appealed. However, a really good friend of ours, who is one of those people whose opinion I trust on everything, she's super smart, super lovely. She's a bit of a golf nut, and I thought, well, go on, and we're here. And she laid down the gauntlet, and not being one to shy away from a challenge, I gave it a go. It wasn't an entire train wreck, though the word mulligan did turn up, occur a couple of times, and I've since learned that a mulligan is gone. I'll let you have another go at that. So my score wasn't terrible, but I was given an awful lot of slack. But she let me use her clubs, which I think was pretty kind of her anyway, because I know how precious people get. And in a pair of jeans and walking boots, I meandered round what can only be described as a mountain with putting greens on the side of it, and had a thoroughly good time. So golf, it turns out, is now on my list of things that I would love to have a go at. Also, while we're up there in their little village, and I do mean this is a little village, I think I counted at most 30, maybe 40 houses. They have a thing called Men's Shed. Now, I've never heard of Men's Shed before, but apparently it's a national organisation, and it's where a lot of the guys, and I think that's possibly a little bit gender specific, but it did turn out to be mostly guys, get together and make stuff. Brilliant. They've got a workshop. There's a guy upstairs servicing push bikes. There were people downstairs servicing motorbikes. There was an artist in residence making these incredible models of apes and the outdoor world. He's an artist. There were people doing all sorts of things. And so I am now looking around the area to see if I can find a similar thing here, because I'd love to be able to make stuff. As a photographer, we're forever looking for things or trying to buy things that would fix a particular problem. And the nightmare is you never get quite there. You've always got something. You have to modify it a bit or screw it to a different bit of the wall because it doesn't work quite the way you want it to. So imagine the opportunities of going into a workshop, designing something and building it specifically for what I need. So I'm now busily hunting around to see if I can find a men's shed near me. So if anyone knows one of those, let me know. We think there might be one in Aylesbury, but I'm going to go and have a nose. So apart from being away for a few days, I'm now safely ensconced back in our studio. It was quite a week. We did some mentoring. A very nice guy called Andrew wanted me to sit and go through images with a view to him coming back maybe every 4 months or so for an hour or two, just to give him some pointers, some encouragement. He's a very good product photographer, but finds portraiture, I'm guessing, daunting more than anything else, because his eye for light was pretty good. All of that side was really good, and his aesthetics were good. So I'm guessing that the only thing really that's holding him back is confidence with people, how to interact, how to engage, how to create that magic in the moment, which when you're doing something that's inanimate, you probably don't have to do. So that was really good fun. I've seemed to spend a lot of the week processing images. Now, on the mastering portrait photography side, of course, we're going to record some of those videos. So if you have ideas of specific things in either Lightroom or Photoshop that you would like us to demonstrate or talk about or create instructional videos on, then please send those ideas in, because the more ideas we have, the much easier it is for me. The hardest bit about doing all of this is that I've done most of it by instinct. So my way of working with Photoshop is a very instinctive way. I've had to find solutions to problems, and I've learned Photoshop that way. It's been problem-driven. Every time I found a problem, I found a solution. But actually, in terms of getting it down into a structure, is much more tricky. And so the more questions we have that I can answer, I think the more useful the videos will be. So for instance, if you'd rather go about it from a functional point of view, for example, I don't know, maybe layers and the layer rendering modes. Maybe that's a useful thing for you. Layers, the different renderings, and the use of masks. Maybe that's something I could cover. And that's very functional. Maybe the use of the lasso tool. Maybe the use of stamp aware or content aware fill and those kinds of things. Maybe that would be useful. Or alternatively, or not necessarily alternatively, maybe as well as things like how I would, for instance, since it came up in the critique the other day, how would I create a black and white of an image where clearly the color image has been overexposed? What fixes are there that are possible? Or retouching skin defects, or switching out a background. And those are much more task-based videos, where instead of looking at the individual tools, we'll look at a idea, a sort of abstract idea. How do I create the best of a sunset, those kinds of things. So have a think about that. If you've got any ideas, please let us know. You can email me at paul@paulwilkinsonphotography.co.uk. If you're on masteringportraitphotography.com, if you're one of our members, then of course you can message us through there and we would love to hear from you. This week we've also had three reveals and four portrait shoots, which have been fairly lively. The weather, luckily for me, I've managed to dance all of that and get away with no rain in the portrait shoots. The hearing dog shoot was a little less lucky. Now, the hearing dog shoot, I was lucky this last week in that when I went there, I was just photographing 2 8-week-old puppies. So it wasn't a hard gig. But when I got there, and one of the images we would need of each dog is the dog outdoors, the dog in amongst summer flowers, because the whole time we're trying to show... we're trying to be contextual so that the pictures have some sense of the season about them. So in the spring, we're photographing it spring flowers. In the autumn, it's autumn leaves. In the winter, well, in the winter, we pray for snow, but we don't get it very much. And besides, people are not very encouraging when it comes to taking an 8-week-old puppy out into the snow, which we can't do. We can do, but in very short bursts. And even then, we have to be very, very careful about the puppy's welfare. However, this particular day, last Thursday, was so wet. Oh, blimey, the water was bouncing down. And it's the first and only time that my client instructed me not to go outside. I was very grateful about that. I bumped into the head of comms down there and he just shook his head and said, don't bother. He said, do everything indoors and we'll get the dogs back next week, which is tomorrow. So tomorrow I'm prepping to go and photograph 9-week-old puppies. However, the weather forecast is still not great. So they may yet be 10-week-old puppies photographed outside. But we shall see how we go. And I'm sure it'll be fun. And then on top of that, we had two weddings, which were just perfect. Each very different, but just lovely weddings. And then one wedding reveal as well. And the wedding reveal made me smile, because you know what it's like when you are a wedding photographer. Now, I know this is not really about portrait photography, and I know most of what we talk about is portrait photography, but I do shoot 25 or so weddings a year. Well, we try to shoot 20, but I keep saying yes to them. We're supposed to have a hard limit at 20, but when somebody comes to you from the manoir and says, we've got this really beautiful wedding and we'd really love you to photograph it, who am I to be rude and say no, bugger off? So we tend to say yes to more than I should. I think we're doing 27 this year, but 20 is our theoretical limit. And the thing about weddings is that you do start off as a planner. You're a wedding planner. You're talking about shots and timings, and then you arrive and quickly become a counsellor. Then you become a part jester, you're trying to make people laugh. Then you become sort of a makeup advisor. Oh, I don't know, is that a bit strong? Is that a bit weak? Well, don't overdo it. We don't want you to look kind of false. And then you're part stylist, part florist, at least as far as making sure everyone knows what to do with those buttonholes, of course. Then you become part product photographer. Shoes and rings, darling, shoes and rings. I kid you not. The other day I walked in and the first thing the maid of honour said to me is, you've got to take a picture of the rings. You've got to take a picture of the rings and the shoes. You've got to take a picture of the rings and the shoes and the dress. You've got to take a picture of the rings and the shoes and the dress and the veil. You've got to take a picture of the rings and the shoes and the dress and the veil and the bouquet. And you've got to take a picture of the rings and the shoes and the dress and the veil and the bouquet and the car. And by the time she'd finished, all I could think of was bloody catalogue. I'm going to be doing a catalogue. And as a photographer, I like to do the portrait-y stuff. I like to do things, as Jerry Guiones put it, he likes to do it with a heartbeat. And so I nodded sagely and I waited till the bride was wearing the shoes, was wearing the dress, was wearing the veil, was wearing, well, not the rings, was in the car and carrying her bouquet. And then I got the most perfect picture of the shoes, the dress, the veil, the bouquet, the car, and fun enough, the bride. Anyway, then very quickly you become a photojournalist because, of course, you've got to run around making pictures of your nice black and whites of people having their makeup done and laughing and crying and opening the champagne and the things you have to do. And then it's back to counsellor. It's going to be okay. Honestly, really, it's going to be fine. He's lovely and he loves you and you're going to be so happy for the rest of your lives. Don't be scared. And then back to portrait photographer, more counselling, more jesting. Oh, possibly a bit of fashion photography thrown in just for good measure. Oh, you look amazing in that dress. Stand over there. The light is fantastic. More assurances. Then a landscape photographer. Ooh, better get a big scenic. Then you become an architectural photographer. Oops, better get a picture of the building. Then you become a jester. Back to reassurer. Back to planner. Photojournalist once more. Fashion photographer. Portrait photographer. Jester. Photojournalist again. Food photographer. Goodness knows you have to take a picture of the food and the cake and all of the bits that go with it. Portrait photographer. And eventually, as you leave as a friend, albeit a knackered one. And people wonder why you look tired at the end of a wedding. Anyway, the clients who came to see their images the other day absolutely got it. And it was lovely to show them a slideshow. So when we show slideshows here, I'm generally not around. I stay out of the way so that Sarah or one of my team will introduce the client. They'll sit them down and they'll serve them tea and coffee. There's candlelight everywhere. They'll very carefully introduce them to what's going to happen. And then they show them a slideshow of the images. And they last about half an hour to 40 minutes. And on my second screen, I'm usually upstairs carrying on with some work, but on a second screen up here, I've got relayed what's going on the slideshow. So the minute that the closing identities come up, closing ident with the Paul Wilkinson signature comes up, I wander in and see how they're doing. Well, I wandered in this last week, it was on Sunday, and I wandered in and both of them were still sobbing, which is one of those things where you feel a little bit guilty because you really have tugged at the heartstrings, but it's great because it means you've taken pictures in a way that they've been able to connect with the day and connect with their memories and really enjoy it and really get into it. And they were just brilliant. And they so utterly got what it was that a wedding photographer brings to their day. They got it. They got the memories. They got the emotions and they absolutely loved it. And on the end of that, there's a quote I want to use from the day, but I can't yet because it needs to be signed off. There's a TV celebrity who was there and he said something really lovely. And I'm waiting to see if I'll get permission to use the quote and to credit him, but we'll see. So what is today about today? Well, the last task I've just been, we've only just got back from Scotland, actually. I've just driven down. So it's about a 6-hour drive back down. And I'm down the studio having processed a couple of portrait shoots because the reveals are coming up. And if I don't do them today because I'm shooting all day tomorrow, it means Sarah won't be able to finish everything off. And that's always one of the challenges with being a portrait photographer where it's your business is your workflow is really, really important. We need it to be efficient. We need it to be quick. We need it to be clear. And most importantly, we need to make sure there are no bottlenecks in it. So if I hadn't have done the reveals tonight, much as I don't really want to be in the studio this evening, without that, Sarah wouldn't be able to do anything till possibly late tomorrow night, possibly early Friday morning, and the clients are in on Friday morning. Couldn't do them any quicker because the stuff that was going on last week meant there wasn't an opportunity to. So I'm just sitting in here, just finished off those images. And that's when you're putting your workflow workflow together, you need to think in that way. You need to think about it being efficient and you need to think about how you're going to avoid getting trapped with bottlenecks where you've got more to do than you can. For instance, one of the things that happened this week is one of my hard drives filled up. It does periodically. It's 12 terabytes. And because we've been shooting quite quickly and a lot of weddings, it's only once everything's finished with a wedding and I'm happy all the images have gone out, the albums are ordered, the frames are ordered, then I'll archive that job. I will almost never archive a job before it's all signed off and completed. which means I've got the raw files and the Photoshop edits sitting on a very large drive unit. Anyway, I ran out of space, which is causing us a little bit of a headache. So the last job I'll have to do this evening is to install another offload drive and then start to move some stuff off. And that then should take most of the night. So I've got plenty of space to work tomorrow. Tomorrow, after I've shot Hearing Dogs, I'm off into Oxford to photograph a teenage model who's utterly beautiful and wants some outdoor photography in sort of location photography, location fashion photography, to go in her portfolio. And these kind of gigs are my favourite. I absolutely love it when I get asked to do this kind of photography. It's my favourite kind of photography because it's incredibly creative. It's fast moving. You can bring ideas to the table. And at the end of it, I just know that the images we're going to create will be super beautiful. And they're the kind of thing, I mean, as a portrait photographer, as any kind of photographer, you want people to look at your images and just go, oh, wow, that's great. You know, and there's so many different facets have to come together to make that possible. Starting with, obviously, you know, my view, always start with the light. But if you've got a super attractive or super photogenic person in front of you, you know that's going to add weight to those images. So if I can couple the light with someone who's photogenic and wants to be photographed, I mean, how many times as a portrait photographer do you battle it out with someone who continually tells you they don't like being photographed? I hate being photographed. And you have to be so energetic and so bouncy. Well, tomorrow, none of that. Tomorrow I'm photographing someone who not only photographs beautifully, but loves being in front of the camera, as you'd imagine, given that she would like to be a professional model or actress and or actress. So an awful lot of fun tomorrow. And I'm sitting here just going through my bag and picking out the bits of kit that I need to take with me. And of course, it's not so much what I need to take as what I want to take. And I thought it'd be interesting just to go through the process of that with you as to how I choose what's going to go in my bag. So firstly, I have one bag, at least for the cameras, because I don't want to be taking tons of kit. We have to be pretty fleet of foot around Oxford where we're going tomorrow. I don't want to be completely laden down with bags. It means I've got to have someone keeping an eye on it the whole time. And if I need someone to be working the reflectors and things, that's going to be problematic. So I've got my wheelie case, and that's all of the kit I can take except for a couple of off-camera strobes. So I'm going to take two cameras. I'm going to take my D5 as my prime, and I've got a D800E, which is our backup unit. I've also got a D4 as a backup unit, and I've umming and ahhing about which of the two to take. But I think in the end, the D5 is 20 megapixel, the D4 is 16, and of course, the D800E is 34 megapixels. And actually what I want from tomorrow is a real bite to the images. Because I'm not photographing kids, because I'm photographing someone who is in their late teens, I know I can control what she does, in which case I don't need a really fast-reacting, fast-cycling camera. What I'm looking for is bite in those images. So instead of using the D5 and the D4 as a spare, I'm going to use the D5 and the D800D. So if I have a problem with the D5, the D800E is certainly fast enough and definitely has that image quality that will really give me a really nice crunch to the images, some detail in those images. Lenses, I'm going to take a full range of lenses. I'm going to take my stock lens, which is a 70-200 f2.8. You've heard me talk about this before, no doubt, which is the Nikon VR2 version of the lens. I don't yet own the VR3. I don't have a business case that justifies me selling or mothballing two VR2s and buying a VR3, except possibly for the weight of the VR3. It's significantly smaller and lighter than my huge lenses, which are the VR2s. But although there is some benefit in that, another £2,000 outlay when my lenses are working just fine. That said, one of the 70-200s that I had serviced the other day has developed an interesting fault, which is the aperture won't go beyond f8, f11, so I can't stop it down, which is no good in the studio. So that, unfortunately, has got to go back for its repair to be once again checked, which is irritating because I've had two out of the three lenses that were repaired have continued to show faults. Irritating beyond belief. So 70-200, I'm going to take a 50mm 1.4 standard lens. Everyone should have one of those. If ever you're wondering, if you're a beginner and you are looking for that first professional lens, buy a 50mm 1.8, not the 1.4, the 1.2, 1.8. they're as cheap as chips, and you'll actually find you get a beautiful, beautiful finish off them. Nearly all of the manufacturers, by 50 mil, I mean 50 millimeter on a 35 millimeter or full frame sensor. Camera. If you're working on a crop sensor, like my little Fuji X-T1, that's a 35mm f1.4, so that's an equivalent to the 50mm. It's a really pleasing lens to use, and you'll get great results out of it for about 100, 120 quid, something like that. The f1.4 and the f1.2, if you get the, you know, something like the Sigma Fine Art lenses, you can pay an awful lot of money for those. But I'm just talking about the normal 50mm 1.8. And I've said this over and over again, and everybody who's bought one just thinks they're brilliant. I'll also take my wide 17-35. It's unusual for me to use that, but you never know if, with street scenes. You never know. I might just find something where the model in question would just look fantastic in a big scene with lots and lots of detail, lots of things going on, and she's just planted in the middle of it. And a wide-angle lens lets you do that. So I'll take the wide-angle lens with me as well. And then the final lens I'll take, which is my favourite lens, but not the one I use the most often, is a very old-school, again, you've heard me talk about this thing, it's a Nikon F2 105. So 105mm, and it's called a DC. So it's a 105 F2 DC, and the DC stands for defocus control, which I think is a little bit of a gimmick. I can't use it. I think it worked better on film than it does on a digital sensor. I get some funny colouring when I use the defocus control. All it was designed to do is to determine how out of focus, or how the out of focus regions either behind your subject or in front of your subject are rendered. It throws the optics out a little bit inside, but I leave it dead on. I just use it as a 105. It's just a metal tube with about three pieces of glass, and it has the most beautiful, beautiful rendering of any lens I own. It's just that being a 105, it's only really good for one thing, and that's a really nice portrait of someone. So I'll have that with me in the bag. I will have a pair of speed lights in there with their batteries nice and fully charged. We'll also have a full set of memory cards, full set of cleaning kit. And by cleaning kit, I really do mean cleaning kit. On more than one occasion, I have had to open up a camera and clean a sensor or clean the shutter box out midway through a shoot, because I change my lenses a lot. Very occasionally, a bit of grass or a bit of hair will get in there. Very little you can do to stop it. I always think I've never been near any grass in there. Sure enough, in the shutter box is a lump of grass or a hair or an insect. And so I have tweezers, I have cleaners, I have brushes. I have all of the kit to clean it on location, because if something goes wrong inside the camera, if you get dirt inside the camera, it doesn't usually ruin a shoot. You'd have to be pretty, pretty awful. I have had it happen where something got in the way of the mirror, and it took me a while to find it, but it stopped the focusing working properly. I had to change which focus regions I could use because a couple of them were being obliterated by, I think it was a bit of hair in there. But it's useful to have all of the stuff with you. In the bag also will be a remote trigger for the speed lights, should I decide to use it, and various bits and pieces, you know, things like business cards, remote triggers in case I decide to do something with that. And that would be my bag. That's a wheelie bag. It's a Manfrotto bag, which really has taken an absolute caning. There's not an awful lot of material left. It really probably needs replacing. But I really like the bag. It's a very functional bag. It's one of the few bags I found that actually does what I need it to do. The handle's getting a bit temperamental. The handle doesn't always go down back into the bag, but it's fine. Then on top of that, we're going to take, I think, one reflector, which will be my small California Sunbounce rectangular white and silver reflector, just in case I want to kick some light around into the eyes. Because at the end of the day, if these are modeling images, we've got to make everything look incredible. All the makeup, all of the skin tones have got to look great. And the reflector can really help a little bit with that. It's not due to be sunny, because that's also something we use a reflector for, is to create shadow. If I'm struggling to find a really nice patch of shade, we can just chuck a reflector up and use it to cast a shadow. Not expecting to have to do that tomorrow. Then I'm going to take a small rucksack, which has a pair of Profoto B1s in there, which are off-camera flash. In this context, off-camera flash. They're using my studio strobes, but I'm thinking we might do some stuff where we light the model and bringing everything else nice and dark. There's a couple of really, really lovely, really atmospheric little alleyways around the back streets of Oxford. And I'm just thinking maybe it'd be great to have some proper control over the lights down there. And I'm going to take, I think, an umbrella and then maybe just a couple of honeycomb grids on those. And that's essentially my kit. Oh, no, and a light stand, one light stand, just so that I can get a little bit of height on it. I've actually got... Actually, I might not take the light stand. I might take an extender pole. I've got a really nice telescopic pole, a boom, that would just help me do that. And that's probably what I'll take because it's I don't need anything on a stand. I need something that an assistant can hold and guide the light in. So that's how we're going to work tomorrow. And that's my thought process is really, and what I'm thinking is what could go wrong and how am I going to fix it? What am I going to do and what do I need for that? And those two thought processes come together in what goes in your bag. So I can fail. I can have a camera fail. I'm going to be okay. I can have a lens fail. I'm going to be okay. I can have a light fail. I can use speed lights as backups. So I'm okay. And all of those things kind of work together. The one thing I fear the most, of course, is theft. But if you keep your eyes about you, keep your wits about you, and keep your eyes on your kit, we can minimize the risk of that. Besides, if someone really decides to pick up the bag and run with it, I think I'm going to be able to catch them because it weighs a ton. So they'd have to be pretty strong and pretty fast with one of us chasing after them with nothing in our hands, whereas they're carrying my camera kit. So hopefully we're going to be okay. And I'm going to let you know in the coming weeks quite how we get on, and hopefully I'll be able to show you the pictures if the model will sign a model release form for me. Then, oh, that's the other thing we pack, model release form. There, don't we forget those? And if she says yes, and then I will show you some of the pictures because I just know they're going to be beautiful. And on that happy note, as you know, I'm part of the team that are putting together the masteringportraitphotography.com website. So if you fancy seeing more stuff, more podcasts, or listening to more podcasts like this, if you fancy seeing articles and videos, then why don't you head across to masteringportraitphotography.com and have a look around, see what you think. We would love to have you join our happy community. If you have ideas for the podcast, please email them to paul@paulwilkinsonphotography.co.uk. That's paul@paulwilkinsonphotography.co.uk. As I'd love to know the kinds of things that you find interesting, the kind of things that bore you to death. Please don't say that. Please don't say I'm bored. That would really upset me. I sit here for hours recording this stuff. Say something like, I'd really like to hear this in the future, as opposed to, what was that crap you were spouting last week? Anyway, if you've got any ideas, we'd love to hear from you. And until next time, remember, be kind to yourselves. Take care.